someone with it. There was armour for men. There was armour for horses. There was armour for fighting dogs. There was even armour for ravens, although King Gurnt the Stupid's plan for an aerial attack force had never really got off the ground. There were more pikes and swords, cutlasses, rapiers, épées, broadswords, flails, morning stars, maces, clubs, and huge knobs with spikes. They were all piled together, and in those places where the roof had leaked, were rusted into a lump. There were longbows, shortbows, pistol bows, stirrup bows, and crossbows, piled like firewood and stacked with the same lack of care. Odd bits of armour were piled in more heaps, and were red with rust. In fact, rust was everywhere. The whole huge room was full of the death of iron. Magrat went on like some clockwork toy that won't change direction until it bumps into something. The candlelight was reflected dully in helmets and breastplates. The sets of horse armour in particular were terrible. On their rotting wooden frames, they stood like exterior skeletons, and like skeletons nudged the mind into thoughts of mortality. Empty eye sockets stared sightlessly down at the little candlelit figure.
"Lady!"
The voice came from outside the door, far behind Magrat. But it echoed around her, bouncing off the centuries of mouldering armaments. "They can't come in here," Magrat thought. "Too much iron. In here I'm safe."
"If Lady wants to play, we will fetch her friends."
As Magrat turned, the light caught the edge of something and gleamed. Magrat pulled aside a huge shield.
"Lady,"
Magrat reached out.
"Lady."
Magrat's hands held a rusty iron helmet with wings.
"Come dance at the wedding, lady."
Magrat's hands closed on a well-endowed breastplate with spikes. Gribo, who had been tracking mice through a prone suit of armour, stuck his head out of a leg. A change had come over Magrat. It showed in her breathing. She'd been panting with fear and exhaustion. Then, for a few seconds, there was no sound of her breathing at all. And finally, it returned. Slowly, deeply, deliberately. Gribo saw Magrat, who he'd always put down as basically a kind of mouse in human shape, lift the hat with the wings on it and put it on her head. Magrat knew all about the power of hats. In her mind's ear, she could hear the rattle of the chariots.
"Lady, we will bring your friends to sing to you."
She turned. The candlelight sparkled off her eyes. Gribo drew back into the safety of his armour. He recalled a particular time when he'd leapt out on a vixen. Normally, Gribo could take on a fox without raising a sweat, but as it turned out, this one had cubs. He hadn't found out until he chased her into her den. He'd lost a bit of one ear and quite a lot of fur before he'd got away. The vixen had a very similar expression to the one Magrat had now. "Gribo, come here." The cat turned and tried to find a place of safety in the suit's breastplate. He was beginning to doubt he'd made it through the night. Elves prowled the castle gardens. They'd killed the fish in the ornamental pond, eventually. Mr. Brooks was perched on a kitchen chair, working at a crevice in the stable wall. He'd been aware of some sort of excitement, but it was involving humans and therefore of secondary importance. But he did notice the change in the sound from the hives and the splintering of wood. A hive had already been tipped over. Angry bees clouded around three figures as feet ripped through comb and honey and brood. The laughter stopped as a white-coated, veiled figure appeared over the hedge. It raised a long metal tube. No one ever knew what Mr. Brooks put in his squirter. There was old tobacco in it, and boiled-up roots, and bark scrapings, and herbs that even Magrat had never heard of. It shot a glistening stream over the hedge, which hit the middle elf between the eyes and sprayed over the other two. Mr. Brooks watched dispassionately until their struggles stopped. "Wasps," he said. Then he went and found a box, lit a lantern, and with great care and delicacy, oblivious to the stings, began to repair the damaged cones. Sean couldn't feel much in his arm anymore, except in the hot, dull way that indicated at least one broken bone, and he knew that two of his fingers shouldn't be looking like that. He was sweating, despite being only in his vest and drawers. He should never have taken his chainmail off, but it's hard to say no when an elf is pointing a bow at you. Sean knew what, fortunately, many people didn't. Chainmail.